Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, and with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research and Human Potential, and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Tonight's guest is Jonas Elrod, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-815-9756, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
Hello there, Fran. And, you know, before we get started, I wanted to remind our listeners that we do have another foundation experiment that's coming up. The details are on the website. I believe it's on February, the second week of February. And it spans over 2 days, and I won't get into all the details, but it's involving, you know, mediumship and messages that come through. Sometimes messages come through for people that are not necessarily intending, you know, to get the message, but it's meant for somebody else. So we're going to, we have a nice little pool of people that are like-minded, that are open-minded, and take a look in your newsletter. Or go on the load page of foreverfamilyfoundation.org. The experiment's going to take place on February 8th and 9th, two consecutive evenings. It takes 15 minutes each evening. And I would ask that if you're going to participate, it would help be helpful, though it's not absolutely necessary, for you to send an email to experiment@foreverfamilyfoundation.org just to let us know that you'll be participating. And as Fran mentioned, we have a really nice guest tonight, Jonas Elrod, who we'll introduce right after the break. He directed a film called Wake Up, and it's a fascinating story, and you don't want to miss that. We were talking a little bit before about, I mean, there's so much stuff going on in the news, and I know we were having a conversation the other day about religion and fear.
Yeah.
And two very powerful forces that sometimes seem to go hand in hand.
Very often go hand in hand. In fact, it could be argued that religion keeps you in line by putting the fear of God in you. And so even though it's not something that's tangible, you still somehow fear it. Like,
yeah.
I better go to church on Sunday.
Yeah, I never could wrap my head around that. You know, the religion, which ultimately is at its roots, you know, teaches like above a loving universe, you know, and yet people walk away with these tremendous fears that they're going to be sent to, you know, a place of damnation and things of that sort.
They're going to be judged.
Yeah, I've come to believe that. That we have, you know, everything's about self-judgment, you know, the evidence from near-death experiences and life reviews and things of that nature.
And even the channeling that sometimes we poo-poo also backs up what they're finding with near-death experiencers.
Hmm. Well, how do you think it affects the kids, you know?
Well, I think that's the hardest part, is that we've got a nation, maybe a world, of children who are afraid. They're afraid of a lot of things, and I think that in addition to the religion, even if they're raised without religion, there's the media, Hollywood, it's all this fear factor stuff, you know. It's a scary world out there, and it doesn't need to be.
Yeah, well, it's not only that. I mean, there are some good things in the media, but I think that much of the fear, religion aside, just comes from the fear of the unknown. It's, you know, most people can't conceive of a time when the world ends for them. You know, it's just, it's a scary thought.
Right, and that's your average person who says, what happens? What next? What's going to become of me? Or is it just going to ashes, dust to dust? But on the other side of the scale, you've got the people who are experiencing and studying metaphysics and spiritual concepts, and they don't have this fear of what's going to come of them. They somehow have moved into another state of mind over what's going to happen. It's almost a kind of a knowing that they have.
Yeah, and can you reach that knowing without having personal experience is the big question. I mean, when we, you hear very often when, people, we mentioned the near-death experiences, you know, what they say is, well, I certainly have no more fear of death. I'm not afraid,
or anything,
afraid to die.
Yes, it's true.
And that's about as dramatic a personal experience as you can get. But personal experiences come in other forms. You know,
very deep meditation can bring you there.
If a loved one comes to you in a dream, and that's a very deceased loved one, that can be a life changing type of experience, and that also could alleviate, some fear. And then, of course, we have all the other types of things that we talk about with electronic voice phenomena and out-of-body experiences and deathbed visions, people sitting with loved ones, as they pass and watch their loved ones conversing, with people that are already deceased. So all these things, we discussed that before, but I often wonder about if you listen to stories from others and you read books and you study and you research, is that enough, or do you need that aha moment?
You need the aha moment because you can take a book and read the exact opposite in another book. You really need, it's the personal experience that gets you there. The question is, have we been conditioned to be afraid of the personal experience? You know, there are these people who say, I lost my husband, or I lost my spouse, or I lost my cousin, and I would just want to see them again. But if I saw them, I'd be scared,
Right.
It's that fear thing. And I truly believe that, and we know there are thousands and thousands of people having these experiences where they do see deceased people, even sometimes before they know that they're even dead. But that the fear factor, I think, comes from the other side knowing that you'd be afraid. So if you're afraid, they're not coming to visit you.
Yeah, and another factor with fear is that very often when somebody suffers a personal trauma, that's so overwhelming, such as, losing a close loved one, that seems to open up other channels, and alleviates fear, for many reasons. I mean, some people it alleviates fear because they just don't care anymore, but others, start a search for meaning, which is something that we're going to learn about from our guest after the break. So I think it'd be a good time now, because I'm anxious to get to our guest, that we go to a short break, and we come back. We're going to introduce the filmmaker Jonas Elrod. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
On Saturday, February 6th, 2011, in Laguna Hills, California, Bob and Fran Ginsberg, founders of Forever Family Foundation, and medium Janet Mayer will speak at a public forum sponsored by the International Foundation for Survival Research. The Ginsbergs will discuss their work and personal experiences pointing to life after death. Janet Mayer will discuss the ancient language she speaks, followed by a demonstration of spirit communication in the audience. For information, email elizabethmcadams@expbeyond@aol.com. That's Elizabeth McAdams at expbeyond@aol.com.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Jonas Elrod. Our sponsor is the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. Bob?
Well, Jonas Elrod spent many years working production in the commercial and music video industry. He was a director, editor, producer, later became a very successful filmmaker. His latest documentary is Wake Up, which chronicles his own journey after his unexpected and sudden ability to see spirit. We'll mention it again, but you can find out more about the film on the website by going to wakeupthefilm.com or on Jonas's website, Jonas Elrod, J-O-N-A-S-Elrod, E-L-R-O-D.com. Welcome, Jonas. Nice to have you with us.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
You know, I guess a good place to start is, you know, obviously this ability wasn't with you from childhood. It came on very suddenly, and I take it you weren't trying to invite spirit. You weren't meditating. So why don't you let our listeners know how this all came about?
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, I grew up in a small southern town, rather God-fearing town, and the only kind of understanding I had around this was Christianity. And no, I wasn't in an ashram or meditating or trying to open up energy centers. This was all foreign to me. So when I had this spontaneous awakening, obviously I had to dig in there and understand all these things. And it obviously came as quite a shock because, you know, I had no idea. I don't know how open I would have talked about believing in a psychic or a medium or a channel or healers or any of this stuff, but I definitely got a crash course in all of it over the 6 years making Wake Up, personally and professionally.
Yeah. Well, you were, you know, all of a sudden, you just, this came on like gangbusters. I mean, I know you described things like, you know, geometric patterns and shapes and different kinds of light and spirit entities. I mean, you know, when hearing you talk about it, there are a lot of common threads with people that have had near-death experiences. A lot of them talk about the same thing. And I was wondering, as I'm watching the film, I wonder if Jonas ever, if it ever crossed his mind that you were dying when this happened.
No, I mean, it definitely was incredibly radical. I mean, you know, and I kind of get how the universe picks the right time for these things to happen. You know, I'm a filmmaker out of New York, and I was shooting the finale of a film in San Francisco, and, you know, the day between being around friends or family or working with my crew is when this opened up, when I was kind of isolated by myself. Initial experience lasted about 7-8 hours of seeing all this stuff in the hotel room or following me down the hallway to go out to my car to get cigarettes because I'm literally freaking out. And then it's just kind of been this way ever since. I mean, it's been 6-7 years, so obviously I'm used to it. But, you know, I still constantly find myself shocked or surprised. And through learning how to meditate, which was a complete foreign concept to me, really learned to help me manage it and do an internal work to help integrate it.
Mm.
So I think a lot of people romanticize these things. And, boy, it's a lot of work. But I get that it's really the thing, only real thing to do. So,
I'm sorry, but I guess, you know, part of your journey was, and you discussed it in the film, you know, is this a curse or is this a blessing, you know, and you seem to teeter back and forth until you figure it out.
Yeah, I really meant that. I mean, early on in Wake Up, I mean, I would go from elation or like just so high on these experiences and feeling like answers I've chased my whole life were coming through. And then the other part was, get this stuff the hell away from me. I do not want to deal with this sort of thing. And so until I learned how to different things to keep it in check, it definitely was a little bit of a curse and a gift.
Yeah, I know one humorous part in the film, so, you know, you're back down visiting your parents in sort of the Bible Belt area, and you know their beliefs. And you're wondering how you're going to break it to them, and you even joked that you thought it might be easy to first make up a story that you were gay because you knew how they felt about that, and then sort of ease them into the other part of it, you know, that you're able to see spirit. So, you know, that was you know, it was a touching moment, but also I could see the humor in that. I'm sure you didn't see any humor at the time.
No, I think that I've kind of had a blessing of keeping a pretty healthy sense of humor around these things. And, you know, for my father, he's never asked a question about it. So you kind of see his answer through his programming and what he thinks it's all about, where my mother has been incredibly open and asked lots of questions. And, you know, she may disagree, but, you know, her drive for knowledge is definitely there.
Right.
And I sometimes on my father's side would have wondered what would have been easier for him to hear. And I've made the comparison several times. There are a lot of people who have these experiences that are completely closeted, or they come out and tell some people and it really goes south for them. Maybe the husband tries to commit them, or if it's a child, the parents get them on medication, or their coworkers quit inviting them to bowling night on Saturday. So in an odd way, it does feel like coming out of the closet, which I imagine, you know, was challenging for a lot of people.
Mm. You know, your parents' reaction, though, you know, was interesting, you know, when you discussed it with them. And their initial reaction was that, you know, more of a religious take on it, you know, that God was speaking to you, you know, that, you know, whether to be saved or, you know, you're chosen, but it was in that frame of reference. So, you know, I don't know, I guess that's how they assimilated the information, and that's probably what they truly believe today.
Perhaps. I mean, yeah, there's not a lot of gray area. So I guess in my father's point of view that it couldn't be anything but God's chosen, which, you know, I don't believe in that sort of thing at all. Yeah. Or the other option is you're schizophrenic. So you're really kind of hoping about this chosen by God thing. But that kind of belief system is, you know, for me, limited. And I don't buy in that sort of stuff. I think people get incredibly the wrong idea. There's tons and tons of people that have these type of experiences. I just feel that we're all kind of in an evolutionary place where we're taking a step forward. And, you know, I believe that we're all energetically connected in the same thing. So it makes a lot of sense to me. But for people that kind of have different belief systems, you know, it's either you're special or you're crazy.
Right.
Which doesn't give a lot of wiggle room. You know, I think it's a lot more shades of gray than that.
Right. Well, listen, you know, the one thing that we find as a foundation, it's the most commonly asked question. And people, as you, you know, point out in the film, I mean, people all over the world are having these so-called paranormal experiences, and they're taught by their culture and their education and by science that they're not supposed to be having, you know, them, so that they question themselves. And that's something that you were trying to work out throughout your search. So I guess the question is, have you reached the end of your searching?
Well, I mean, searching, I suppose. I mean, I was looking for answers in Wake Up, and, you know, I met a lot of brilliant people, both on the scientific side and the spiritual side, and participated in a lot of activities to help open me up. By the end of the film, I spent some time on an Native American Indian reservation with Mark Colson, who I participated in a sweat lodge and a vision quest, because frankly, I was tired of asking other people. I'm a big believer that we all carry this information. It's just in the unconscious. So I'm done with the questions. I feel like for right now, but you know, sometimes when you get an answer, it only brings up five more questions when you say.
Right.
So it's like, you know, great, I got this one. Now that's eight more I got to figure out. But which is funny, because I think even the searching, you know, the hardcore searching can also become an addiction, which you have to be careful with. So, you know, there's that.
Right. Absolutely.
But I thought you brought up a great point, though, about how, you know, our culture is not set up to handle this sort of stuff. It, mainstream culture just isn't. And so we talked to a, you know, really brilliant scientist named Dean Radin, and he talked about how when meditation came over or yoga came over, this was bastardized. People thought this was heathen kind of practices. Now you can turn on a television set and see a celebrity doing the downward dog while you know, selling products. And his whole goal was to try to bring that taboo inside the bubble. And it seems like we're being pushed into place, regardless if we want it or not. That is happening. It's just too many people are talking about it and experiencing this for whatever reason. So I thought that was a great point you brought up.
I wanted to make reference to part of your experience that I thought was significant. Your initial experience when this happened was you saw a motorcycle, the image of a motorcycle at the top of the room, and then sort of fall to the floor. Can you get into that a little bit? Because I think it's worth telling our listeners about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at the beginning, you know, these experiences open up for me, and what was told to me by whatever you want to call it, spirit, is kind of what I stick with, was to expose what was happening. And that first night, I, for lack of a better word, and I kind of hate how this sounds, but had a premonitory vision of things that were going to pass. And I saw a motorcycle wreck, you know, on my hotel room wall. And 3 months later, that came to pass with my best friend, Rob Reese, died in a motorcycle wreck coming to meet me, which opened up a whole turn of events. His passing actually introduced me to my love, Ramira, that I've been with for the last 6-7 years. So, it's really wild stuff. And, I mean, these things happen. You're like, why the hell did you show me this? But, you know, that kind of is where the faith gets tested, and you kind of get pushed deeper if you're open to it.
Yeah. Did you come to the conclusion that – did you think that this was a precognitive type of vision, or did you contemplate that possibly this was, could have been a warning or from spirit?
Well, I mean, you can really go off the deep end if you start thinking that way. And you know, I started started thinking that way. But, you know, it's really going to come down to opinion and belief. I mean, I believe things are predestined, and I believe there's free will. But I think it's when it's your time, it's your time. And I can't really go in other places with that, because to me that would have seemed kind of cruel to show me that way and not explain it to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, people can really drive themselves crazy when it comes to that. I believe everything that happens is supposed to, is for a reason.
Yeah. Well, you're right on point with that. I mean, most people that are grieving the loss of a loved one play that over in their mind a million times. You know, what could I have done? What did I do wrong? And the guilt is a big factor in the whole grief process. So I totally understand what you're saying. I mean, it serves no purpose to keep going over and over things like that. One of the things I wanted to ask you, you talk about in some of the, you see spirit in different ways, and sometimes you actually see what appears to be angels. Now, when a spirit appears as an angel, I mean, when you think about it, I mean, do you think that's your frame of reference, like your conscious interpretation of the image that you're seeing, or do you tend to think of it as, no, that's what angels look like?
Well, I don't regret saying this or telling people, and that's been my experience, but I've definitely gone down this road. It's like, well, did I like that because that was my programming from, I don't know, 6 to 32 that this exists? But I've also seen things that have been linked to other religions that I've never been consciously familiar with, if that makes sense. I didn't realize that was this. And then,
right.
You know, a year or two later, I'm like, oh, wow, this is a teaching in Hindu religion. So from my humble opinion on it, it's all real. It all exists.
Yeah.
But that's a great question, what you say. It's like, well, maybe it's a black car because that's what you were taught. It's a black car. But
right.
I've gone down that road, and I'm going to stick with what I'm saying now. I believe it all exists.
It's evidential, you know, when you're seeing other type of religious, images that you didn't know about, you know, so, you know, why would you, you know, interpret them the way you did? So that would tend to think that, you know, yes, you're seeing the real thing. I also thought it was interesting and very logical and scientific of you, you know, when these experiences started happening, you took the next step of going, you went for medical testing. I mean, that's what you have to rule out first. You had to see if there was some sort of a physical anomaly that might be causing that. And
I mean, I was certain when this was opening up that this was real, but it would have been perversely and grotesquely irresponsible for me to work on this film with my co-director, Chloe Crespi, and all the other people that put this together and not flip those rocks over. I mean, that's what any rational, sane person would do. And so when I'm waiting for the MRI results, you know, that fear kind of creeps in. It's like, wow, maybe I have some kind of thing in my brain where it's not firing correctly. But, you know, you roll that out and they're like, hey, you're fine. That definitely forces you to go different directions if you are looking for answers, which for me it was the spiritual route and the scientific route.
And I know that part of that, the medical part, was seeing a psychiatrist to determine if he could find anything wrong, and he also didn't find anything out of the ordinary. But as I'm watching it, I'm wondering, you know, how many people go to a psychiatrist in a similar situation that walk out with a whole bunch of meds and they get a diagnosis, you know. I think that you were lucky, and I don't know if it had anything to do with the filming, but I think a great many of the people in the mental health professionals dismiss these things and assign a diagnosis to it.
I couldn't agree more. And you know, the psychiatrist was Richard Friedman, who was very fair and. You know, I think we all tend to act a little different on camera, but he seemed like a straight shooter. I don't think he believed my story, but that's okay. But I would totally agree with you. We're in such a weird society. Little Billy's brought in at 11 and having these phenomenon. Well, let's kind of shut Billy up and let's give him the right medication until he gets straight. And
yeah.
I think that happens to a lot of people, which is incredibly unfortunate. That's not to say I don't believe in medication. Some people certainly need it. But if you're seeing lights come out of the corner of your room and it's a thing, then maybe medication's not the best move on that. But until these things are understood and accepted in a mainstream culture, I think it's going to be business as usual. I mean, God bless that we're not 200 years back. If I came out talking about this or you guys talked about this, you'd get burned at the stake. So right. At least we got that going for us.
Yeah, and not only with adults, but, you know, with children, how many children, it's thought in a lot of circles that children have even more ability, and what they say is more evidential because they haven't been preconditioned to believe certain things. And instead of embracing these abilities, you know, that they're shut down, and maybe that'll change in the future. But
I'm hoping so. I mean, I think it's going to be the younger generations that really have to carry this mantle. So I'm hoping that this information can get out and, frankly, a mainstream sort of way where people can at least have the exposure or at least to start asking questions. But I agree, children are definitely tapped into this sort of thing.
Yeah. You know, the reality side of the film that had to deal with relationship issues was very touching and so true. You know, with when you have two people in a relationship and one person has these types of psychic or so-called, you know, paranormal experiences, and the other one doesn't or may not even believe in it, boy, that could put a strain on a relationship. To Mara's credit, I think you were pretty lucky that she was discerning but open. Was there a point where you thought that your relationship might not last because of what you were going through?
No, I mean, Mara was amazing. And ultimately, I think Wake Up's a giant love story, and this is just part of it, the whole awakening process. But whatever I needed to do on my end to make things work with Mara, I was going to do, and I felt strong that she would too, and she was really amazing, and I often put myself in her shoes. It's like, this is some crazy sounding shit. What if Mara came home and said, guess what, all these things happened, and I hadn't had that experience. So she handled it incredibly well, and, you know, this is part of the path for a lot of people, and so we felt it was very important, not that it was easy, but to expose our relationship and expose it's not all sunshine and butterflies. I mean, there's real work and a lot of things you have to deal with to make it through. But, yeah, I feel like I had the jackpot. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
She's been amazing.
Yeah, I know at one point she mentioned, like, you know, you pretty much dropped the bomb, you know, and that's something that she really had to work through. And she accompanied you on a lot of, you know, your trips. It was very touching. Well, she had some sort of an epiphany when you went to visit the Buddhist.
Yeah, I mean, Mara definitely had a very special moment. I don't know if I want to give it away right now, but, you know, Mara has a reckoning of her own. And, you know, it's still by far my favorite part of the film. It's just really beautiful. And, you know, it kind of goes to show you don't have to start seeing spirits or all this wild stuff to get on a spiritual path. It's just gaining more awareness, and she certainly did.
Yeah, and when you want to find out more about that film, we're talking with Jonas Elrod, director of Wake Up, and you can go to his website at Jonas Elrod, Jonas Elrod, ELROD.com. Or you can go to directly to the film site, which is wakeupthefilm.com. And as Jonas said, not only is it a film about certain types of spiritual and psychic experience, but it's a search for meaning, and it's a love story all rolled up into one. So I think you'll enjoy it very much. What we're going to do is we're going to go to a short break, and when we come back, we're going to continue learning about some of these other stops along this journey that Jonas has made. So stay with us, and we'll be back in just a couple.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.winbridge.org.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
On Saturday, February 6, 2011, in Laguna Hills, California, Bob and Fran Ginsberg, founders of Forever Family Foundation, and medium Janet Mayer, will speak at a public forum sponsored by the International Foundation for Survival Research. The Ginsbergs will discuss their work and personal experiences pointing to life after death. Janet Mayer will discuss the ancient language she speaks, followed by a demonstration of spirit communication in the audience. For information, email elizabethmcadams@expbeyond@aol.com. That's elizabethmcadams@expbeyond@aol.com.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest here tonight is Jonas Elrod. This show is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to Jonas Elrod, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. With these hard economic times upon us, some of our supporters write to say they love the radio show, they want to see it continue. They love the work of Forever Family Foundation, but they just don't have extra dollars these days to send our way. Even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do, and yet we want to do so much more. So this is how everyone can help without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out. And each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. But you don't have to stop there. If your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation, and when you find your items in one of their 800-plus online stores, sites, and hotels, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. And a few announcements of events. We have already put up a few on our website. The newest event in New York, Communicating with Your Children Across the Veil, is set for March 25th at 7 p.m. in Oceanside, New York. Watch for your email notices, and you can check the website for if you'd like to make reservations or for more information. The Holiday of the Earth raffle will also be up shortly, and hold the date May 20th through 22nd, 2011, in Chester, Connecticut, for our Grief Transformation Weekend. Also, email notices and website pages will be up shortly. There are only 50 spots at this weekend, so you might want to jump on that quickly. And back to you, Bob.
Okay. While we're on the subject, you'll find, if you want to purchase the film Wake Up, there's a link on our website through Amazon that you could go on to, or in the email announcement that you received announcing the show. Well, Jonas, I wanted to get back to the actual, you know, process that you might want to describe. I know that in the film you mentioned something about what you see as masses of energy, and you describe that you sometimes, you know, sort of push yourself into the energy. I mean, can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little hard to explain, but you know, it's not like the movies. You know, for me, I mean, sometimes I'll see figures or people, which is actually rare, are shadows or shards of light. Sometimes there are these masses of energy. And what I learned how to do is identify the energy is I can kind of push myself into it, and then I can see what's in it. And some, you know, it's normally a person. It's really wild, but that's kind of how I see a lot of it, is just clouds of energy. And sometimes it'll be stuff I don't understand, maybe like odd symbols on it. Like I said, sometimes it'll be, you know, yeah, some old woman hanging out in the kitchen. It's pretty wild, but that's been my experience with it.
Yeah. Have you ever had any communication with any of your own deceased relatives?
I have, but it's not, to be honest, it's not really something I don't like to share on that much, but Not a lot, but I mean, it has happened. Yeah. And sometimes even in dream states or meditative states, these things can pop in. Yeah. But I think there's so much ego that, for me, attached, that it's hard for me to hold it. You know, if it's something I don't know anything about, then I can normally stay at a pretty level place. But otherwise, I'll get excited in the channel cut. The clairaudience aspect for me is sometimes spotty.
Yeah, I can understand that. You know, we work closely with a lot of research mediums, and a lot of them describe similar things, that although they're very, very adept and about getting evidential information for, you know, for other entities, when it comes to their own people that they're close to, it's difficult. You know, they sometimes seek the services of other, you know, mediums, you know, to try to communicate. So I can certainly understand how the ego self takes over.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's always kind of the smart-ass question, but I totally get it. It's like, well, if you have these abilities, what's the lottery numbers? Well, you know, it just kind of doesn't work that way. You
yeah,
know?
I know.
I
know.
I can, you know, and I get it, but it's always with that kind of smart-like tone. But, you know, I can definitely read other things with other people a lot more than I can reflect.
Right.
So I think that's one of the good reasons to start doing internal work to kind of clean that up, you know.
Yeah. And one of your stops along your travels across the country, you visited a researcher who had a process where he took photographic images while you were meditating. That was
kind of an interesting experience, and you know, apparently for you. And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that the reason you were excited about it is because this might be a way of walking away with some hard evidence. You know, not only hard evidence that you could show to Mara and to others, but hard evidence that you yourself could refer back upon. So was that part of it? Is that why you wanted to see him?
It was. I mean, his name is Umberto de Grazie, and he's in Rome, and just a very, very gifted man who has his own strong abilities, who's come up with this software that they'll take pictures and they'll divide up the ultraviolet rays, gamma rays, so on and so forth, and he can distinguish energies in the room. But earlier on, this kind of shows my spiritual immaturity at the time, because now I can honestly say, at least for the most part, I don't care if people believe.
Yeah.
Early on, though, it was incredibly important to me, and I can see almost in a pompous way, you know, this is 6-7 years, but I'm trying to, you know, own this stuff. Hey, I've had experiences, I have answers. Well, no, it doesn't work that way. So I think in an earlier immature state, if I could just show some pictures, that it would prove it to a lot of people that maybe they're on the fence with. By that point in Wake Up, I mean, I was already certain of what everything was, so it wasn't so much for me, but, you know, it kind of doesn't work that way, you know? And anyway, I was able to work with Umberto, and we took some pictures, and it was a really amazing experience.
Yeah, there were actually some images that you could make out. I mean, images of with faces and bodies and so forth. You know, I thought about you know, the stuff that goes on now with EVP and ITC. You know, where sometimes a spirit can carve an image out of a certain medium. You know, whether it be you know, the white noise on a TV screen or you know, puddles of water and so forth. So, you know, maybe there's a similar process going on here.
No, that makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. You know, I don't know. I haven't experimented that much with this stuff. But, you know, for some people, if they can experience that, that may be all the proof they need. And really, what was important to me, I mean, it kind of started off as this supernatural or paranormal kind of thing, but I think the crux of Wake Up, at least for me, is like about getting on a spiritual path. You know, this could have started a different way. I could have gone through a windshield of a car and it had me asking kind of the big questions. Who am I? What is God? Why am I here? But for me, you know, I just started seeing a bunch of crazy stuff that's around us all the time, and it led me to the same place. And you know, that's what I feel is a blessing around this. So, you know, people want to know. And I think times are tough for a lot of people. And only when things are kind of hard is when you start asking these questions. So I love it that this stuff is creeping up more and more into more of a mainstream way.
Mm. So would you say that, you know, one of the purposes of you doing the film was exactly that, to spread the word that this stuff is real and it happens and we have to acknowledge it?
Well, some of it. I mean, literally when this happened, and I don't want this to sound a certain way, but the spirits told me to expose what was happening just out of that night. And these experiences continued. And, you know, I'm a filmmaker. I'm a documentary filmmaker by trade. And that's how I exposed it. You know, I definitely, for me, have an understanding that God or creator, whatever you want to call it, it's a real thing. And that when we leave these bodies, that there's a whole different thing going on, you know, helped with a lot of fear that I had. I mean, the greatest fear I think all of us have, other than maybe naked in a locker room, or not in a locker room, naked in public or public speaking, is death. And for me, this really helped a lot of my fear-based issues around that. So, you know, for me, that was what came through. But I think for a lot of people, it can be very helpful for. I mean, we've been doing screens of Wake Up around the country, and I was not prepared. The response has been tremendous, and we do Q&As at the end, and people have been crying and hugging everyone just because this has been on the tip of their tongue for a long time, and they were happy to see something that had come out.
Yeah, you know, you created a safe environment and where people can talk to you and not feel judged, you know. So like you say, it was some sort of a release for a lot of people. I guess that's what you're experiencing.
I mean, it is, and I think the fact that I'm just this normal guy stumbling around, you know, walking in the mud, is relatable for some people, as opposed to maybe being told what to think. You know, Wake Up's not trying to say this is what to think by any stretch. It's just kind of documenting me looking for answers, and hopefully if it can just get you to question your reality or what you've been taught, I think that would be amazing.
Well, let's not go that far and say that you're just a normal guy. I've seen those white sunglasses. Those are not normal.
Well, I used to be a musician, so I guess I'm a little eccentric at times, and maybe my fashion sense is a little questionable, and I understand that. But
I sort of like them. I'm just joking with you. They're cool.
That might have been homage to Kurt Cobain. I'm not quite sure what's up with that.
That could be. You know, I'm watching you go through some of these experiences, and one stop that you made was, Jay-Z Knight has a Ramtha, as you know, the entity that she channels, you know, has a school, and I watched you there, and you know, I was feeling for you, because at first, you know, you really looked like you were lost, and that, you know, you thought that this was totally silly, you know, but then you went on to explain it, and I understood it wasn't so much that you thought these things were silly, but you just didn't want to become part of that club. You weren't ready to admit that you were part of that spiritual club. Was that about it?
I mean, I think you nailed it. I mean, there's a lot of it that's going on for me, and this was my co-director, Chloe Crespi's idea, and I was resistant to it, and I took that as probably a good sign I should go do this. And I still don't feel part of the club. I feel part of the community, but, you know, and I have, you know, issues around organizations at times, but
yeah.
You know, Ramtha School of Enlightenment, Jay-Z Knight, she was a really wonderful person. And regardless of what you think about this stuff, which is definitely the big moment in the movie for a lot of people, you know, what she's teaching, I did see happen. You know, there were people literally blindfolded hitting a target with a bow and arrow. There were people blindfolded in this huge football field finding these cards that were hidden for them. So I thought that she had a lot of great things to say, and I'm glad I went, but, you know, it's kind of a comedy for a lot of people because, you know, I clearly don't want to be participating with some stuff. But,
right.
You know, it also helped me, you know, let go of things. So it was a very good experience for me.
Yeah, well, that's what it was all about. You were exposing yourself to just as many different disciplines as you possibly could. I think you picked up something from each one along the way. I mean, at one point you sat with a Sufi mystic, you know, and you seemed to be, you know, questioning some things, and he was confusing you a bit, and then he looked at you and he said something to the effect that, you know, this is why people shouldn't sit with mystics, because we're bad for people.
Yeah, I mean, I think we got really lucky. We met Llewellyn Von Lee, who's just a badass. I mean, he really lives and does this work. You know, it's not this, you know, so many spiritual people, you know, you got to watch out for him. But he was an incredibly clean guy, and he helped shift me. He's like, you're stuck in the woods with all this supernatural stuff. He's like, you are missing the complete point. You know, of course, he says in a cool way, but it was kind of a nice butt kicking he gave me. It really helped me look at it in a deeper way as opposed to the phenomenon.
Yeah.
I mean, really, for me, I can say it clearly now, but the phenomenon is just a side effect. And I think it's important not to get lost in that.
Right. So when he said to you, you know, Jonas, you know, say yes to the mystery of life, what do you think he meant?
I think Llewellyn was just talking about going deeper and really flipping over more rocks and just really dropping in, which, you know, it's not easy. You know, we have these belief systems that we build up, and when they start crumbling away, and mine absolutely did, you know, while making Wake Up, it makes you, at least for me, resentful. So I was a little upset that my experiences didn't match my religious teaching as a child.
Mm.
So I think it takes guts to do it, but I don't really think there's anything else we're supposed to be doing but just trying to remember and discover who we are and discover the meaning of this reality.
Yeah. So a lot of it has to do with you know, looking and exploring within, you know, instead of looking outside of yourself.
Well, that was my interpretation. And, you know, we're set up in such a culture, it's hard to look inside because we're constantly bombarded with so many things to check out, you know. It's really kind of the opposite. So when I hung out on the reservation, it was very easy to drop in. But, you know, I live in New York. You're from Brooklyn. You get it. You know, Times Square is a trip.
Right.
Constant stimulus.
That's right. You know, the external distractions can be a tremendous obstacle to, you know, to finding any kind of real meaning. I'm always fascinated. You know, the Buddhists really seem to have a handle on things. Every time I watch it, and it was also reinforced in your film. You know, and they you know, mentioned something about suffering. You know, and we find that all the time too. You know, with people in grief, that it's suffering gets people on a spiritual path. I mean, in your case, it wasn't suffering, but it was a similar type of earth-shattering experience, you know, a trauma, so to speak, you know. So, I mean, do you agree that you know, people sometimes are just chugging along and they don't contemplate these things, but it takes something dramatic to change the whole way of thinking?
I couldn't agree more with that. I mean, there are, I guess, select few, but, you know, when things are going great and the marriage is perfect and the money is out of hand and all these adventures, you're not really going to sit around and start, at least I think a lot of people, contemplating who am I? What is God? Why am I here? Some people do, and it doesn't mean you can't do both, but yeah, it was kind of what I was saying earlier. This getting on a spiritual path could have come out of, you know, a traumatic experience, a near-death experience, a loss of, you know, the life as I knew it, you know, going through a windshield of a car. And so the Roshi Joan Halifax, I think, nailed it. And suffering often does lead people onto this path.
Mm.
I mean, it's kind of the heartbreak with Wake Up. I mean, we shot 400 hours, and, you know, Joan gave us 2 hours of her time. And, you know, we're making a movie, so we have about 90, 95 minutes to fill. So everyone gets about three to 6 minutes.
Yeah.
She really blew us away with a lot of the information she was sharing, and I really had the utmost respect for her.
Well, sounds like you got some footage for a sequel.
Oh, well, I wouldn't get ahead of ourselves, but we definitely have a – I mean, I think I've exposed as much as I want to with me, but
right.
Some of these teachers, we just got so lucky with who got on board with us.
Right. So what's next for you?
I just want to dance, you know, to my
okay.
The dance in the park. Well, I mean, you know, I'm still working, and I'm working on a feature, and, you know, a lot of this information I learned, I'm going to try to figure out a way to put into a, you know, feature film. I think I'm going to take a break from the documentaries for a little bit.
Right. Well, you certainly did an excellent job with them, but I know you're the type that wants to keep moving, so try something new. We have been talking with Jonas Elrod, his film, Wake Up, as I mentioned, you can go to wakeupthefilm.com, you can go to jonaselrod.com, or you can go to the link on our foundation website, it's a solid hour and a half of very interesting, I'm hesitant to call it entertainment, it's more like enlightenment. So, Jonas, I appreciate you spending your time with us, and we look forward to you joining us again.
Well, thank you very much, guys. I greatly appreciate it, and y'all have a great night.
All right, you too. Take care now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was really wonderful, and it is an entertaining enlightenment film. And we've already watched it twice. I'm looking forward to seeing it again. But now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures in Mexico Gulf by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, planktons, corals, algae, and all creatures in our Gulf of Mexico. I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. That was by Masaru Emoto, May 9, 2010, after the Gulf tragedy.
And it's time to say that our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.